Welcome to the latest episode of Across the Bifrost. Today, Pat and I are going to be talking about Doctor Strange and, more importantly, Wong. Before we dive into that, though, I want to take a moment and shout out a few different groups and individuals, starting with our Patreon, patreon.com/acrossthebifrost. Support the podcast, keep the spice flowing. We really appreciate each and every one of you. Next, I want to thank Discount Games Incorporated, always selling products at the maximum allowed retail price. Maximum allowed retail price would not be a good deal. Sorry. But if your local game store doesn't have the product or you can't find what you need, be sure to check out discountgamesinc.com. Last but not least is Muse on Minis, high-quality wargaming accessories made by gamers for gamers. Be sure to check out Muse on Minis or Muse on Store for all your wargaming needs. All right, without any further ado, here's my conversation with Pat Dunford about Wong and Doctor Strange.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a part.
Death
that
is what gives life meaning. To know your days are numbered, your time is short. That's what the Ancient One said to Doctor Strange in the recent MCU movie universe. And, you know, I've always tried to live by that. I'm excited today to be joined by my co-host, Pat Dunford, who is still alive and kicking. And we are going to talk about the brand new box, Doctor Strange and Wong. So, Pat, how are you doing today?
I am doing well. Thank you, TT. Little bit confused by your opening. I thought for a second it was going to be another spectacular Patrick Dunford intro. As it is, I'm glad to see it's a spectacular Doctor Strange intro. I am really excited for this character.
Yeah, me too. And don't worry, everyone. The Pat Dunford introductions are coming back. It's just they take a lot of time. I have to just been busy with life. But yeah, glad you're doing well on your side of the pond. And yeah, I'm very excited to talk about Doctor Strange. And he comes with a new affiliation as well, right? He's representing the Defenders, which is our first glimpse into them.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff to cover with just this one box release, because we've got Doctor Strange himself, who is plenty to talk about. We've got the Defenders affiliation, brand new affiliation that you just mentioned. We've got Wong, who is a very cool, interesting character in his own right. And then we've got a ton of cards that are also in this box, right? We've got a new Crisis card, and we've got three new Tactics cards. So we've got a lot to cover in this episode.
Yeah, so I guess we should just go ahead and jump in. Before we dive in, I do want to take a moment and thank our Patreons. You can check us out at patreon.com/acrossthebifrost. We recently switched to monthly support through Patreon. So if you're interested and able to support the Patreon, we really do appreciate that. Second, I apologize if my audio quality is a little weird. I'm recording in kind of a weird scenarios with not my usual microphone setup. So hopefully you guys can hear me okay. Pat's the one you're tuning in for anyway. So let's just jump right into it on Doctor Strange. Pat, do you want to run us through the top of his card?
Yeah, so Doctor Strange, he is 6 stamina, medium move, size 2, and he costs a whopping 5 threat. His defense is 3 physical, 4 energy, 4 mystic. So nothing too special here aside from the threat cost. Jumping straight to his attacks, he's got 2 of them. He's got Bolts of Bedevilment as his free attack, which is range 4, 5 damage energy. It gives him power equal to damage dealt, and if this attack deals damage after it is resolved, you can push the target character short. Worth mentioning, because I think it sometimes gets missed, this is a push, but it doesn't specify a direction, right? So he can pull people towards him, move them around any odd way. His second attack, Crimson Bands of Cytorak. This is his big spender. It's range 3, 6 dice, costs 4 power, and it's mystic. After the attack is resolved, the target character is staggered, and then he has a wacky effect called Mystic Binding. It requires a crit, a wild, and a hit, all in the same roll. But if you get that, the payoff is really big. Instead of staggering the target, you can give them an activated token if they've not already got an activated token. So you can target someone with this and just take them out of the game for a turn. Stop them from activating. Could be really huge, and is, I think it's fair to say, it's the most powerful effect that we've seen on attack so far.
Yeah, probably. I can't think of one that's more powerful. Yeah, I can't think of anything. Yeah, sorry, I wasn't ready for that question. Yes, I think it is the most powerful thing of the effect.
And right, I wasn't trying to put you on the spot, but I think it's really strong and you've got to take note.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, the thing I love about it the most is that the stagger is guaranteed, right? I can't tell you how many times before Asgard Thor just doesn't do any damage to get the stagger, right? So at worst case scenario, you're going to stagger your opponent, right? Which is very powerful, right? And best case scenario, well, I guess best case you're going to daze or KO him, but like just giving him the activator token with that, it's almost a coin flip. I think it's around 46% chance to get that with six dice is very powerful.
Yeah, I think the way the math works out is on its own, it's not a coin flip, but of course Doctor Strange has a power that lets him reroll his attack dice, which we'll get to soon. And when you take that into account, it becomes like a 50-50. One other thing I wanted to say about this power, it has strange interactions with field dressing because it applies it adds the activated token as an effect after the attack. This means if you want to activate a character with it, as in give them an activated token, but you daze them, you can't apply Mystic Binding because they're dazed. They can't be affected by the special rule. So if your plan was to force someone to activate and you accidentally daze them instead, that could be bad news for you if they have field dressing, right? Because they could then field dressing the character and still activate them.
I think that's pretty corner case. Most of the time when I'm trying to just apply some effects and I daze the person, I'm normally happy to get the daze. Like, worst case, you're burning out the field dressing. But it is definitely important to note, right? And the wording of the stagger is going to function in the same way, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, very cool attacks. Moving on then to his superpowers, and then we'll finish up with his leadership. So Oshtur's Refuge is his first power. It is an active power. It costs 3. This character or an allied character within range 2 of this character removes up to 3 damage. This superpower can be used only once per turn. Then we've got Hogos Hoary Wisdom, a reactive power for 2. When this character or an allied character within range 3 of this character is targeted by an attack, this character may use this superpower. Add 2 dice to the target character's defense roll against the attack. Then we've got a bunch of innate powers. We've got Eye of Agamotto. This character may modify and reroll failure dice results. This character may reroll all of its attack or defense dice once per attack. Shield of the Seraphim. Whenever this character rolls dice, after the effect is resolved, it gains 1 power if it rolls at least 1 block result. And Flight plus Gem Bearer, Soul, and Time. Rounding out with the leadership, his leadership is for the Defender's affiliation, Mystic Empowerment. Once per turn, when an allied character declares an attack, before choosing a target, it may spend 1 power. If it does, you may choose whether this attack type is physical, energy, or mystic. If this attack deals damage, the target character gains the Hex special condition. So, I feel like I've read a whole book reading out his card. There's a lot to cover here. Where do you want to start?
Let's do the affiliation last, right? Let's go into Defenders last. So let's just kind of talk about Doctor Strange himself coming in as this very interesting 6th threat piece, right?
Yeah.
Or 5 threat, excuse me.
5 threat piece with the option to be 6 or even 7.
Yeah, 7's just ludicrous, though, right? Ludicrous speed.
I mean, I'm not siding up to 7 off the bat, but hey, you never know. It might turn out to be good. Anyway, yeah, he's very interesting, isn't he? Because his attacks are very controlling, right? His free attack lets him move people around, and his spender lets him stagger them or activate them. So he's limiting what they can do and manipulating them. And then his superpowers are incredibly defensive. Having a heal superpower, one that is very close to Medpack, right? A little bit less range, a little bit more expensive, but it's pretty close to Medpack. And Medpack right now is the most popular team tactics card in the game. So having that as an active superpower is obviously very strong. And then combining that with Hogos Hoary Wisdom, which is a reactive power he can use to protect himself or his allies, it's like a better version of Vibranium Shield in that it works against mystic attacks as well. This is a very, very strong combo.
Yeah, I think one of the things that struck me in my games with him so far is, like, how did your power generation feel for Strange?
So I think you're right. Power generation can be a problem for him. When you've got Bolts of Bedevilment, you can obviously have games where you get a good roll and then your power generation is fine. And Eye of Agamotto helps with that, right? Because if you just want to generate a lot of power, every time you get a mediocre result, you can reroll and hope for spike. But his powers are very expensive. 2-cost reactive is expensive. 3-cost active is very expensive. Like, and his Crimson Bands cost 4. So he really needs a lot of power to be very effective. And if he's not getting those lucky bolts, then he can run into trouble. One of the things I've found is if he's being attacked, then Hogos Hoary Wisdom is really strong, along with Ostra's Refuge, because it kind of ensures he doesn't take too much damage from attacks, and then damage he does take converts to power, which he then cycles back into continuing to protect himself, right? And Ostra's in particular heals for 3 and costs 3 power. So he's quite hard to take down, because you give him power, he stays alive, he activates, he heals himself. But if he's being ignored, then his power generation can sometimes be a bit lackluster. Is that where you were going with this, or what's your experience been?
Yeah, that's about lines up with what I've had, right? He doesn't have a way to give himself movement outside of just advancing, right? So normally, like, round one, maybe we're getting 1 Bolts of Bedevilment out there, right? If he's interacting with the scenario piece, it's just, I've found games where there are, he's one of those characters that without the soul, without a gem, we're talking about without a gem, he quite often wants to spend a lot more power than he has.
Yes.
And then there are some scornergies there where, like, I want to activate early for Crimson Bands, but there's a lot of times where I want to activate in the middle of the round in order to take use of Refuge fully. So he has some interesting decision points to make there. Scornergy might be the wrong word, but, like, there are different ways you can play him, different ways he can approach the game, and he's very effective in all of them. And I think he's a really great piece because of that.
Yeah, I also think he's really, really good. Exactly how good, I'm not sure, but I've been pretty impressed with the early games. I love how consistent he is with Eye of Agamotto. He just gets to reroll a lot. Every time you're dissatisfied with a offensive or defensive roll, you can reroll. Every time you want to generate more power, you can try and fish for a block if you didn't get one in your initial roll. And as we just mentioned, power is very, very important for him. So I've found that he plays out in a pretty satisfying way on the table. My initial experience is he's very good at supporting people. And he himself is nightmarishly difficult to kill. And that those two things make him a little bit similar to Thanos. And he's also quite expensive. Not as expensive as Thanos, but not a mile away. And I found he has some sort of similar things going on, where he's a great support piece, but maybe he can't have all of his team near him like you would want in theory to leverage his abilities. And although he's very resilient, I mean, in this game, dice can still spike. And if they do, you can end up in big trouble. If you're relying on him taking incremental damage and healing it, and then he just gets dazed, then you can have big problems as a result of that.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that he's a... hard to take out. That's kind of what I'm focusing on here. I mean, if he's willing to throw power into it, and then obviously the eye can give him a lot of flexibility there. He can be. I didn't find him overly durable, if that makes sense, though.
Really? I think my experience is he's been very durable. I haven't really done a ranking for a while, not since we had to use a Q&A about it, like a listener Q&A, but I would rate him as one of the more resilient characters in the game.
I'd have to sit down and think about it. That's not where I inherently put him. Like, normally I think of someone like... it's weird too, because you need to quantify for points. Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with you there. I'm going to think about it a little bit more. But normally I think of someone like Black Dwarf or Thanos, right? That just have like a blade of hit points and defensive stats in their way. Or Hela, who has someone that can kind of escape death, right? I get what you're saying about the eye. I mean, it kind of ensures that you're always rolling, you know, close to or slightly above average, right? It changes the bell curve. But he's only 3 physical defense, right?
But he's 3-4-4 defenses, and you're right. Having lower physical is a problem because it's the most common attack type. Plus, it makes him a little bit weak to throws. I mean, it's the combination of being able to boost his defenses, like Captain America, being able to reroll his dice whenever he gets low, and being able to heal himself if you don't fully deal with him before he activates. It's a lot of stuff to work through.
Yeah, it definitely is. And the heal maybe... Yeah, I think I'll need to play it smart. I get where you're coming from with it. It's very power intensive for him to be that tanky, but I understand where you're going. He definitely can be a very durable piece and similar to Groot, where if you don't finish him off in one round, right, it can be very, or not one round, but one activation, right, it can be very frustrating as he kind of, you know, he med packs himself and then he Oster refuges himself, right, and all of a sudden he's back to full. So, yeah, I'll think about that some more. He's definitely durable. I just, when you said overly durable, I was a little confused, but maybe you're right. I'm coming around to it.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. The thing I always compare to is Thor, right, who is fairly durable. He's like an average durability, above average durability, but above average cost. And I think Strange is much more durable than Thor. He's got 2 total hit points less, slightly worse defenses in terms of how they're split, but he's got those 3 special rules. And I don't consider that I'm worried about Thor getting beaten up.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. I mean, I do worry about Thor getting beat up, but I understand where you're going with that. And if Strange is, it might have been just the way I was playing Strange, right? If I guess if Strange is dedicating power and actions based around him generating more power, he could kind of encompass a more durable role than maybe how I was playing him or I've seen him played so far.
Yeah, yeah. One thing I found is usually it's better to beat up the people near Strange than Strange himself so that you don't get trapped in this cycle of giving him power that he spends to continue to rebuff your attacks. So even though he is very good at protecting his allies, I have found it's better to target his allies than to target him, and usually easier to take them out than to take him out. Although obviously the reward for taking him out is probably going to be pretty much greater in most situations because he's such a valuable piece. Talking about the gems that he can bear, Soul and Time. Soul in particular has been an early favorite with Doctor Strange, and I've seen a lot of people trying it out, and it's impressed me quite a lot. It almost single-handedly solves his power problem and gets him to the point where he can use Hogos Hoary Wisdom on almost every attack that he's facing. Have you had any experience with the Soul Gem?
I have, and I definitely think it's the way to go. The Time Gem is just, A, too expensive, and B, like, I've never really found myself wanting another activation, especially at a cost for Strange, right? I mean, everyone wants additional activation, but I think you get where I'm going with there. The Soul Gem does really help solidify his power issues, and it's interesting there as to where he kind of falls on the field. And again, Pat, right, you considering him more durable, right, it allows him to play a little bit more forward than other people do, right? In my experiences, when I jam him forward, and it might have just been the matchups, I just got a lot of stuff thrown at him, and he was actually dazed out a little bit quicker than I'd like. But again, I need to revisit that. I don't have a ton of Strange games.
Yeah. I mean, throws are definitely a concern for him, although it's worth noting that he will get power from those throws, at least, if he's got the Soul Gem. I found the Soul Gem combos very well with Hoary Wisdom, because there's a lot of characters who want to use a superpower to power up their attacks or enable them with things like charge. And so you tend to be able to play him forward and fuel your defenses that let you make that play more safely. Although I will concede it is still a gamble and it could still go horribly wrong. But I think it is a pretty viable way to play him and pretty effective.
Yeah, I think it's definitely the way I would want to play him. Again, I would rather have that little bit of risk like we talked about for the upside of the amount of power he can generate, right? Because once Strange starts going with power, then he really shines.
Yes. So it's a gem worth considering, which is really cool. Always like it when you've got those options. So we haven't yet talked about the Defender's leadership. I know in the after credit scene for this episode, we're going to talk in detail about defenders, maybe do some roster building. But I think we should talk about the leadership now because it's such a defining feature of, well, any leader obviously is defined by their leadership because it dictates so much about how you're going to play them on the table. What do you think of Mystic Empowerment?
I think it's really good. I don't think it's as good as the internet thinks it is. I think it's very powerful. On Strange himself, I mean, he is energy, which is already a favorable attack method, right? Energy and Mystic. It played into and exemplified that he, for me, didn't always get the best use out of it because he is kind of power-starved to begin with. But I do think it's very powerful and it opens up a lot of interesting avenues for other characters in particular, right? So I generally like it. The effect is very powerful without even factoring in the hex trigger. And then hex on top of that is great, right? And hex, obviously, for those of you who don't know, is the same as Loki's flip side, which is just crits don't explode if you're hexed.
Yes. So it is a slight offensive and defensive limiter, right? It's going to make you worse at dodging, worse at defense rolls, worse at attack rolls. So it's a good effect to just apply to almost anyone in any situation. You can use it offensively on your first attack to make your enemy's defense weaker against subsequent attacks. And you can use it on a character who you don't intend to take out, but you just want to limit their output or their retaliation against you. So it's a pretty versatile condition that you're pretty much always happy to apply. And I like that it's fairly easy to apply because the two effects of Mystic Empowerment synergize with each other, right? The first effect is you get to pick your damage type, so you can match that to the lowest defense of the opponent. And the second effect of applying Hex requires you to deal damage. So you're spending one power to make yourself do more damage on average and then be rewarded for applying that damage.
Yeah, so what did you think of Mystic Empowerment? Like I said, I like it. I don't love it on Strange, but I think it's a very powerful affiliation, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I like it too. I think it's only costing you one power a turn because you can only use it once per turn. So I like it more on characters that have excess power, but you don't need a lot of excess power to make use of it. And it's by no means an ability that is only for characters with excess power because of the fact it's only going to cost you one. I think it's cool for giving the affiliation flexibility for dealing with different kinds of enemy characters. The fact that maybe you don't need to worry as much about what your character's attack types are because you can always change to any given situation. And your opponent might be more worried about dropping a character with a 2 defense because every character on your team can take advantage of that 2 defense. You know, like someone like Venom with this 2 energy, suddenly every character can threaten to attack him with energy, and that can be pretty scary. I have been pretty impressed by this power. I have especially liked it on beam attacks. Already I've seen people throwing Vision around, and with the wording of this beam, Vision makes his entire beam one of the attack types, and then he could apply Hex to anyone he damages. That's pretty amazing. I think overall, this leadership seems quite strong to me. It's like a slight damage increase with a slight offensive and defensive benefit. But it's hard to quantify because it's quite different to anything we've seen already.
Yeah, and again, I like the affiliation. I just don't think Strange needed it, is what I'll go out on a limb and say. Are there times you would modify Bolts or Crimson to something else? Probably, but Strange isn't leveraging this as much as I think other defenders are. So in general, I agree. It's a very good leadership. I rank it pretty powerfully. I just don't think it is a... He doesn't benefit it as much as the other people you're taking in your roster are going to, is what I'll say.
That's fair, but I think it still has some synergy with his kit in the sense that his attacks are trying to hinder his opponent and control them, and Hex does that as well. So I don't think it is useless for him. I know you didn't say that, but I want to emphasize that I don't think it's by any means useless for him. I think it's just fine for him. He's not Captain America, where he's not the character that synergizes most with his own leadership, but he's also not Red Skull, who doesn't get much use out of his leadership. You know, I think he's somewhere in the middle where it's fine for him, but it is definitely better if you take characters who get a lot of synergy with it.
Yeah, I agree with that. There are times when you'll use it, right? But there, like I said, there's a lot of times when Strange is just personally, for me, power starved. And again, for me, like Bolts and Crimson Bands cover a lot of the attack types I want personally. But let me be clear. It's a very powerful leadership. And you talk about how Venom doesn't want to play into defenders, right? Venom is one of the characters that can make great use of this Mystic Empowerment. And we'll kind of go over that in the after the credit scene a little bit more.
Yeah, it's fun to think of which characters combo with this effect and how can you make the most out of it.
Yeah, so is there anything else we need to talk about Doctor Strange? I think for my high-level recap, he's a very good and powerful 5-threat character. I think you will often see him as a 6, personally. I think the gem really kind of opens him up and kind of lets his full kit be exposed. I think if you're playing against Doctor Strange in the upcoming Tabletop Simulator League after we reset lists or things, it's important not to try to nickel and dime him or characters around him. You really need to focus him down, and if you have things to throw at him, be sure to throw them at Doctor Strange.
Yeah, I'd say I'd add one more thing to that. Is he's expensive. I think he plays well in any affiliation. So I think you want to consider how to play him in particular rather than worrying about defenders necessarily, at least right now. Not that defenders are bad by any means. And I think a lot of the time, the right answer is going to be to ignore him because he is a lot of threat on one part of the table and his defenses are so high that if you're not in a position where you can exert overwhelming force on him, probably better not to try. Like you said, TT, you don't want to nickel and dime him. I think most of the time you might just not want to attack him at all.
Right. Now, just to kind of go one step further, and we've talked about it on the podcast before, if you're playing Doctor Strange, you need to give your opponent a reason to attack him, right? You need to punish him for ignoring Doctor Strange, right? And that might be holding a really vital secure or camping, or camping on a secure, holding an extract, something, but you need to incentivize almost, if you will, your opponent attacking Doctor Strange, right? If you find that they're just kind of pretending he doesn't exist.
Yes, kind of force their hand. Make sure you don't put him in a place on the table where he can be marginalized.
Yeah, so I'm excited about Doctor Strange, and we'll circle back there later. His cards do a lot, but let's go ahead and let's talk about Mr. Wong.
Yeah, Wong is another character that people are very excited for, having seen his cards around about Gen Con time. I will go through and read what he does. It won't take quite as long as Strange. So Wong has 4 stamina on either side, medium move, size 2, 2 threat. He has 2 physical, 3 energy, and 3 mystic defense. And his only attack is a strike, range 2, 4 damage dice, physical, giving him 1 power. Then he has his superpowers, and this is really where the money is. We got Faithful Assistant. This costs him 2 power. Choose another allied character within range 3 of this character. It gains 1 power. Character may be affected by the superpower once per round. Then you've got Meditate. This is an action, and it lets one gain 1 power. You've got the Vishanti's Blessing. This is his 3rd active superpower. Costs 1. It's also an action. This character or an allied character within range 3 of this character removes up to 2 damage or 1 special condition. The character may be affected by the superpower only once per round. And then finally, Servant to the Sorcerer Supreme. While within range 3 of an allied Doctor Strange, this character adds 1 dice to its defense rolls, going up to 3-4-4. So Wong is interesting because he is an incredibly specialized support piece, the most specialized 2-threat character, and 2-threat characters are already very specialized, right? He's a character with bad defenses, terrible attacks, and his powers focus basically entirely on supporting his friends, giving them power, healing them, and removing conditions.
Yeah, I mean, for his point cost, I don't think his defenses are that bad, but he definitely fills an interesting role and one that we don't currently have in the game, right? He's been very hit or miss for me, and this is a very weird comparison I'm going to make here, but he's played out a lot like Nebula for me, where if you just go into a game with him without a plan, you're going to find yourself kind of struggling and he's going to be lackluster. But if you have a plan on how you're going to use him, how he's going to interact with the crisis and so contribute to your overall winning strategy, then he can be very powerful for either like opening up early plays or really hammering home how hard the attrition can be leveraging Vishanti's Blessing. So I really like him. I'm not going to take him all the time, but I definitely think if you have a roster that can let him shine, he has a place. What do you think of him, Pat?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think he is a character who you certainly could take in any roster. But as you said, it's easy to look at his abilities and go, those are great. I always want to be able to heal my characters and give them more power. And I hate if I get staggered or similar. So I'm just going to take him. But then you're maybe ignoring the fact he still costs 2 threat. You know, and that is a high price to pay for those kind of effects just on their own merits. You really need to be thinking about how you're going to take advantage of them in the game. And I like Wong a lot in teams that can maximize the effect of healing because their characters are very resilient and unlikely to be dazed or KO'd in one round, and whose characters are very powerful, so they're especially concerned by debilitating status effects. And I think it's very cool to have a plan for how who you're going to give power to every turn, and maybe leverage that power. But I've seen a lot of people get excited by that point in particular, and I think that alone is not enough. I think if you just want extra power, you probably would rather do it with a card like Advanced R&D, or maybe even the Avengers Leadership might be a less significant cost to your overall roster than taking Wrong specifically for that purpose.
Yeah, like you said, you need to know what you're going to do with him for the rest of the game. If you're just going to generate a power with him and then he's just going to sit on your home D with no one else in range, like, there are probably better characters you can take that with, right? Characters that are going to impact other aspects of the game, right? But if you're going to be on Gamma Shelters or something where he can sit on your home E, right, and still interact and heal with people kind of on that middle objective while still securing your own, then that's kind of more of a role where he can shine, right? And that's not the only one. It's just the first one that comes to mind. Like, you just need to have a plan for him to really impact the game. Because a lot of the other two-threat characters really have large and heavy game impacts, right? But they're going to be in ways different than Wong, right? Rocket has incredible damage output for a 5-threat, right? Black Widow is incredibly annoying, right? Nebula is great at, you know, harassing your opponent and threatening them off pieces, right? So how is Wong going to influence more than just, like you said, Pat, just a functional team tactic card of giving someone one extra power on turn one?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I think it's also worth repeating, like, Wong is so bad at fighting that he is functionally doesn't fight, right? A 4-dice strike at range 2, his usual best-case scenario for dealing damage is advancing into range and attacking once with 4-dice. And having a character that can't deal with other characters at all is problematic, especially when he himself is likely to be taken out by anyone making 2 attacks against him. So, yeah, it's not a case that he can sit on a point and guarantee to get that point. So you really do need to be thinking about how you're going to use those superpowers.
Yeah, he doesn't have a push. He doesn't have a throw or anything like that. So, like, if Black Widow stands next to him, right, Wong just stares at her, right? Because, like, the odds of Wong actually taking out the 2-point Black Widow are so low. You can use the Defender's ability on the strike, but, like, it's really lackluster. Yeah. And I think he's the only character in the game that just has a static builder for his attack actions.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's other characters that have static builders. I'm sure that at this point there must be others, like Ebony Maw, for example, a character who for having only a static builder on his attack action. But yeah, it's not a lot of power that he's generating, and he doesn't really have any way to turn that power into output. Obviously that's fine, but like you said, the problem with Black Widow running up to him is he can't deal with her, and eventually she will deal with him. So you are losing that 2-point trade in the long run. And you need to make sure that the other things he's doing to support your team are going to be worth it.
Yeah, and I think there are ways, like Pat and I both said, for him to do that. It's just like, you just need to have a plan to kind of exemplify, or to put him in a situation where he needs to succeed. So I think Wong's a good addition. I do want to talk real quick, Pat. What do you think about Wong and Strange together?
Ah, I'm glad you asked me that, because I don't love them together. Despite the fact they're in the same box, they're both defenders, and Wong even has a special role that makes him good with Strange, I think the core problem is Strange is an expensive support piece that makes your model stay alive better. And Wong is a support piece that makes your model stay alive better. And I think you get into this situation where you've spent too many points of your total team on keeping models alive, but which models are you keeping alive, right? I don't like that they're a 7-point package. In a lot of teams, it leaves you without enough room to have more than, like, you get 2 to 3 medium power level characters in, say, a 17-threat mission, maybe 2 threes and a 4. And that's okay, but Wong is basically like playing a character down a lot of the time because he's not really doing anything other than keeping the others going. And then when you add in a gem on top of that for Strange, you make the problem even worse. You can get to a point where Strange and Wong are 8-threat, and their offensive output is about the same as a 4-threat character. And that is a lot of extra threat value that you're using to support without threatening anything for your opponent.
Yeah, I actually ended up with the same. I'm glad we agreed there. It's just a little too many points for just not enough oomph or scenario impact for me personally. So I like them both independently. You know, Wong is probably going to be in my defenders rosters just so I have that 2-point defender slot that I can kind of mess around with. But I haven't loved them both on the table together. So I'm glad we agree upon that.
So the place where I like them both together, and I think it's totally justifiable to take them together, don't get me wrong, this is just my first impression, and I get that people will do it, especially because in Defenders, Wong is your affiliated 2-cost option, and that makes him appealing just for roster building. So you'll probably find that they're on the table together no matter what. But the time that I really like it is in crises where Strange can play in the middle of the table, far forward, be very, very relevant on the crisis, and be in danger. So the perfect example of this is Gamma Wave, right? Where Strange can sit on the middle objective in Gamma Wave, and he can move away enemies with his push. They have to deal with him. He can basically apply his defense buff to the entire team, because it's Gamma Wave, and everyone is clustered within range 3 of him, and his heal as well. And then in that situation, Wong can sit back on the back point and help keep Strange alive, right? And you can get in a situation where it's already hard to run around Strange, but when you have 2 activations worth of characters healing him, it becomes even more difficult, right? Because every time you spend an activation failing to kill him, it will feel like someone else will activate and heal him again. And I think that can be a pretty cool pair, specifically in Gamma Wave, and maybe in Deadly Meteors too. But I'm not sure that I like them together in a lot of other crises.
Yeah, I'm just... but yeah, let us know what you guys think as you kind of get these models on the table. You can find me on Twitter at Sung Su. You can find Pat on Facebook and then Patreons. Obviously, you have access to the Discord. So let us know how you like Wong and Strange together. Pat and I like them situationally, I think is a correct assessment there. Right, Pat? But
yeah, I think you don't assume they're going to go together. That might be a bit of a trap.
Yeah, but they do have some incredible tactics cards in this box, Pat. Is there one you want to start with here?
Yeah, they're all really, really good. Let's start with the Defender's specific card, Pentagram of Ferala. This card is crazy. It is a reactive card, and it says, during the power phase, Doctor Strange or Wong may spend 2 power to play this card. So you have to be in Defenders and have either Doctor Strange or Wong play it. Place a Mystic Portal token within range 1 of the character that played this card. Then place a Mystic Portal token within range 5 of the same character. At any time during a character's activation, while within range 1 of a Mystic Portal, it may spend 1 power once per turn to be placed within range 1 of another Mystic Portal. So, okay, I've said a lot of words, but basically you're putting down 2 points. One is next to the character, one is far away from them, and then characters of either team can pay a power to teleport between those points once per turn. TT, what do you think?
First, I don't like the name. When I saw the card, I knew you were going to make fun of my enunciation of it, because I have no idea how to say that word. Like Farala? For I don't know. My brain doesn't like it. I
think
it looks like
falafel.
I'm just hungry thinking about it.
Don't worry. I'm pretty sure it's made up. It's made up. You can pronounce it however you like.
Oh, excellent. I mean, all words are made up. But that, moving on from that, I think it's important to note the timing of it, right? It has to be during the power phase, which is important. It's going to be interesting whether or not you do or don't have priority, whether you honestly care. It opens up some really, really interesting first turn plays, and I really like the card. Let me be clear. Like, I think it's very powerful. I love that it's a very powerful card that doesn't involve around just like beating someone in the face, right? We're not healing or adding dice or re-rolling dice or modifying dice. We're fundamentally changing kind of the way characters can get around the board. So I think it's very powerful. I really like it. I also love that it doesn't have a duration, right? Like, this portal is just there for, as far as we're concerned, the rest of time. So I think the card's very, very, very powerful. What do you think, Pat?
I agree. It's very powerful. It's a crazy unique effect. Really, really cool gameplay options that it opens up. Because it's so unique, I think it's hard to gauge exactly how good it is. And it's hard to know when you want it. But straight away, you can see that that amount of movement distance that you can reuse turn after turn potentially could be very, very good indeed. And there's no restriction on having an extract while you move through this portal, right? So you could use it to escape with valuable extracts like Recadded Herb or Alien Ship. Interestingly, of course, the other team can use the portal against you and they can chase after you if they're in the right position. So that could lead to crazy mini games popping up over the table. And it's worth mentioning as well, if you're playing a Defender's Mirror match, you can end up in a really weird situation where there's four portals down and you can teleport to any of them from any of them.
I didn't even consider that, but yeah, that would be extra confusing.
Right? That'd be crazy, but probably pretty fun. So I love how unique and fun this card is. I actually really adore its design. I have no idea how good it is, but personally, I'm very excited to try it out, and I'm sure there will be times where it really shines.
Yeah, it's been a great... I've really enjoyed it, is what I'll say so far in my games with it. I think it's very powerful and definitely warrants more testing. It's I think it's a fantastic Defenders-only team tactics card, right? It's right up... I personally rate it very highly, right? It's up there with... I mean, I like it more than I like Avengers Assemble. It's up there close to Cosmic Invigoration or like Wakanda Forever for me personally.
Mm. Yes. I think one of the things you mentioned about it was the fact it's in the power phase and you have to consider your timing of it. I think that is very interesting. Obviously, if you have priority, that makes your life a little bit easier. But you certainly need to be thinking about what are you doing, what's your plan with this portal and how are you going to make the most use out of it? Because if you don't have priority and you use it to get close to the enemy, well, then they can activate first and get close to you, and this plan could backfire horribly. So I really, really like the card. I think it's very crazy, and it leads to a lot of interesting tactical options on the table and a lot of fun gameplay moments. So I'm really glad that it's a card that exists in this game. Thumbs up.
Yeah, and I guess take a moment. Like, I can't emphasize enough how much your opponent can use this against you, right? You know, in some of my testing games, I made a portal, and Hawkeye would take the portal forward, attack twice, and then he'd hookshot back, right? So I'd always be able to go on a back D, let's pretend it's a D, and Hawkeye would be able to go to the middle of the map, functionally shoot anyone he wants, right? And then hookshot back to the D. The negative of that is that, like, you know, Corvus Glaive can take the portal, and then, like, all of a sudden he's on your D secure, right? In Gamma, I've seen it used the same way. We're like, yeah, I'm going to put this from my close to the middle, and then your opponent can leverage that too. And then the amount of threat your opponent can put on your home objective, right, which is worth three to them, is kind of insane if you think about it.
Yes.
So you do definitely have to use it. Be careful as you're using it, is what I'll say. But it can be very powerful if used well. I think it's going to be one of those high skill cards. And I think if you're a competitive player, which I think is kind of our demographic here, you know, think about ways that your team can exploit this if you think you're going to be in a Defenders matchup.
Yes. Certainly, you probably want to be using it. Don't ignore it. Don't disregard it. Definitely try and leverage it to your advantage.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. So we have a couple other cards that are slightly easier to pronounce, right? We have Vapors of Valtor.
Yeah,
Pat didn't correct me yet, so I think I got it right. It's an unaffiliated active card. If there are two or more non-dazed allied characters within two of Doctor Strange, he may pay three power to play this card. So it requires two characters that are pretty close to Doctor Strange. We talked about the Strange Turtle already, so might not be too unusual to see it. Choose a character within three of Doctor Strange. That character gains three obscuring mist tokens. Each time the character is targeted by an attack, shuffle the tokens and reveal one at random. If the token has a blank on the back, you may reroll any number of the attacker's dice. If it has a silhouette, the attack continues as normal. At the end of the round, remove all obscuring mist tokens from the character. So it's a shell game, and I think it's important to point out now that one of the tokens, right, has the silhouette and the other two don't.
Yeah, so you have a two-third chance of getting the result you want. So
yeah, this card, the defending character.
Yeah, well, not necessarily the defending character, right? because this card you can play on any character.
Oh, that's true. You could put it on your opponent. Yep.
Doctor Strange. So you could put it on your opponent, and then when you attack them, you can play the shell game, and 2/3 of the time, you get to reroll your attack dice against them. So it's a split between a defensive card and an offensive card. And defensively, rerolling all of their attack dice is really, really strong, and it only works 2/3 of the time. Offensively, rerolling all of your attack dice is not quite as strong, but it's still very good and works 2/3 of the time. Probably not as good as something like Dark Reign on average that works all the time, but I mean, it does work for unaffiliated characters and Dark Reign doesn't. So it is somewhat comparable, I think.
Yeah, I like the card's effect. My immediate concern is how often am I going to be able to use this? Again, in my personal games with Strange, Strange was pretty power hungry. And then the quantifier of needing two characters within two of him, it's just kind of a lot of checks, if that makes sense. So I like the card. I think it's a cute card. I'm happy that it's in the game. I think it would make my 8. I just don't know how often it would make my 5. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's hard even to make the 8 just because there's so much competition. The Fat Strange himself has 3 cards in this box, you know? And that is a lot. That's a lot of room you've got to make. And I don't know if you could always get all of them in your 8, even if you might want to take all of them. In any case, I think this card shines in the situation I spoke about before. It's something like Gamma Wave, where Strange is playing very far up the table, like in the middle of the table, surrounded by friends. Then Vapors of Valtor can maybe ensure your plan of putting him in a risky spot, but staying alive, right, and using it on him. Or you could put another character in that risky spot. Strange can stay behind him, keep that other character alive, and also support him with his other defensive abilities. And I like the fact that if you have to, you could also cash it in for a bit of extra offensive output as well. So overall, I think this card is really cool. I think the restriction of it costing 3 power and needing 2 other characters nearby is a bit of a tall ask. And that makes me question if it's the right card for the job I just described over something like Inspiring Monologue, for example, or even just Disarm, or, you know, one of the myriad defensive cards that already exist in the game. But I think it might sometimes be the correct choice. I think it plays that useful role if you have the right strategy for the crisis.
Yeah, the only other thing I want to point out is, like, I've been playing a lot of Doomed Prophecy lately. This is an interesting way to get your Doomed character a little more survivability, right? Since you have a chance to reroll their attack dice, even if you don't have any physical defense dice, right? It's a chance to give you a little bit more there. And, like, Corvus and Proxima are two of the models. If you're playing Strange forward, like, this is a very expensive package, right? They might be able to trigger that. And then Corvus and Proxima are pretty defensive off the in themselves. So there are definitely going to be some interesting synergies with it. And I'm excited to see what people kind of come up with.
Yeah, worth also mentioning, I suppose, rerolling attack dice is especially powerful because you can avoid wilds, right? And so it makes the chance of wilds a lot less. And that means you can be protected from various other effects that you might otherwise be terrified of.
Yeah, definitely true there. So the last card, do you want to walk us through that, Pat?
Yeah, so the last card, 7 Sons of Cinnabus. This is an unaffiliated active card. If it is Doctor Strange's activation and there are 2 other non-dazed allied characters within range 2 of him, so that is the same stipulation as Vapors of Valtor, he may spend 3 power to play this card. Doctor Strange may use the 7 Sons of Cinnabus attack shown above once this turn. If this attack deals damage, after the attack is resolved, the target enemy character gains the Incinerate special condition. The attack is a casual Beam 5, 8 dice energy attack for 0 cost. So that is quite the attack, and the fact that it's also implying Incinerate is pretty compelling. We've seen cards before that require you to cash them in to improve your attack, and my hot take is that this is the best of those cards that we've seen. What do you think?
I definitely think it's the best we've seen. I don't love it as a card.
It's the best, but maybe it's not good enough. Is that your point of view?
It comes down to kind of the same thing, right? This is functionally a 3 power plus a tactics card attack. And while the attack is really good, I don't feel like it's a three power plus some characters are near me and the tactics card level power, if that makes sense. It's a very, 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 very powerful beam. But it just takes a lot.
It does. It does. You have to have multiple characters near you and you have to have power to spend. But you are doing a ton of damage with this beam. If you're hitting more than one character, you're applying a really, really good status effect in Incinerate, to remind our listeners, because Incinerate has not been in the game that long. An incinerated character rolls one less dice on their defense rolls. And on top of that, it has really good synergy with the defender's leadership, because you can use it to change the attack type to whichever one is going to favor you the most and apply Hex to everybody that you damage, as well as Incinerate. So I think it is a pretty compelling attack. You're right, though, that it might be hard to justify the slot for it in your 5 or 8.
Yeah, I mean, the analogy that is obviously easy for everyone to make is, like, it compares pretty decently to, like, a Friday AI Unibeam, right? It obviously doesn't have the Incinerate on it, which is really big, right? But, like, that very powerful beam is still just a singular attack and has left me wanting it to roll a bit better at numerous times. So I like the card. I just don't love the card. But I do like the way they're kind of moving with these additional cards. I definitely think, to your point, Pat, this is the best attack card we've seen, and I'm excited to see what comes in the future.
Yeah. Do remember, of course, that this is on Doctor Strange. So he, to the point you made about, well, sometimes rolling dice isn't enough, remember that he can re-roll all of the dice when he attacks with this card, with his Eye of Agamotto. So it has a little bit of extra reliability built in. I already mentioned the synergy with the Defender's Leadership. I think this card is pretty good on Strange in particular. And I think you want it in exactly the same situation as Vapors of Valtor, which is when Strange is going up the middle of the table, surrounded by his friends, and the enemy team is going to be there. Right. So once again, on Gamma, this seems like a great card. And I've actually had it used against me to very good effect, where it was very easy for Doctor Strange to play this on turn two and hit three of my characters, because there was just so hard for me to avoid that outcome on Gamma Wave in particular. So I think it has a place. I think the fact that those two cards both want the same situation is going to make it so you probably don't want to include both of them, because I think at that point the competition is a bit fierce. And you need to decide against, do you want the more flexible and defensive option in Vapors, or do you want the pure offense in Cinnabus?
Yeah, definitely agree with that. And again, it'll be interesting to see on the table. It is a very powerful beam. And for people that haven't played around with Incinerate a lot, it is an extremely powerful status effect. Losing that die is monstrous, right? So a fine card. We'll be interested to see kind of how it adds in there. So normally we don't cover the crisis cards, but today we're going to cover the crisis cards. I know we're getting close to time. Thank you again for everyone that listens. There is a extract in his box. It's the Montessori formula found. It's a 17 pointer. There are three spell books on the E-map, which is exciting. This is our second E-map, right, Pat?
Mm, yeah. And our first extract on an E-map.
And players score one VP for each spellbook held by the character during the cleanup phase, right? And then it's interact to pick up a spellbook. A character can't hold more than one spellbook, but a character holding a spellbook can make the following attack once per turn. And it's Mystic Beam, which is a range 3 energy beam with 6 dice. So what do we think about Montessori formula?
I think it's very interesting. On face value, I like it a lot. I think it's interesting to have an extract, and I immediately think about how that combos with different kinds of secure maps, right? Like, if you take it with Gamma, which is a crisis we've mentioned several times already on this pod, you get a massive brawl in the middle, right? Where you're fighting over the same points and you've got no incentive to be anywhere but the middle of the table. On the other hand, if you take it with something like Infinity Formula, you get this very interesting choice, because you've got 3 points in the center and all of your secures are on the edge. And you have to figure out how you're going to split your team and use your opening activations to the best effect, given that problem. Overall, I think it's really, really cool just to have an E-extract. It's a slower than average extract, because you can only score 3 from it. And I think overall, we've seen that most extracts, probably the popular ones at least, just scoring 4 or 5. And then, of course, you have to consider the effect of the spellbook. And the effect of the spellbook is huge. Basically, every character in the game likes this spellbook, but some people like it more than others. And you can do some really cool combos with some characters and the effects that they add to their attacks. And the list of these is almost limitless. Are there any that have spoken to you, TT? Any that you thought of?
Not off the top of my head. I'm curious what you've come up with for it. I haven't put as much thought to the beam aspect of it to as much as the e-secure interacting with other things.
Yeah, that's fair. So, okay, so a couple of things to consider. First up, cheap characters become a little bit more compelling, especially characters that have pretty bad attacks, because your 2-threat investment suddenly has a very, very powerful 6-dice beam as their new default attack. And a great example of this is Okoye, who upgrades her attack, but also benefits from General of the Dora Milaje, so that she is rerolling her dice once for each of those beam attacks. Then you can also combine it with characters that have cool effects on their attacks, right? So Black Panther can use Mantle of the Black Panther to reroll all of his beam dice against every target. That's pretty absurd, right? You've got characters like Gamora, who is the deadliest woman in the galaxy, and that benefit applies to her beam. And then you've got effects like tactics cards. You can drop somebody off and they can use the spellbook. You can play Wakanda Forever and all of the Wakandans can use their spellbooks.
Hmm.
So there's a lot of combos or synergies with different special rules on characters and different cards.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting. I think it's going to be a pretty popular one. I think any of the brawly teams are going to want to play it. Yeah, I'm excited to see more of this map, if that makes sense.
Yeah, me too. I think you're right, it's going to be a good brawly one. I'm especially excited to take it as a Wakanda option, even though it's not the fastest crisis. I already mentioned the synergy with Black Panther and Okoye, right? Killmonger also has a synergy in that he can get his extra dice against one target, and he can get rerolls with kill count on his beam. And even Shuri, although she is not the best target to hold a spellbook, she can make a bunch of attacks and generate extra power when she rolls skulls. She can flip damage to from shields if she gets bad rolls. Like, you can get a situation where your whole team has good combos with spellbooks, and you want to try and grab them and make the most out of them, and you can play a fun little mini game of how do you maximize this wacky effect.
Yeah, so I think we both agree Montessori formula is going to be pretty popular. Like I said, be prepared for it to be a little bit slower. Don't let the beams get you off guard. Venom is not happy about this at all. So all in all, Pat, how do you rate this box as a whole? Like, what do you think the overall value of it is, both to the game and for players looking to make a purchase?
I think it's incredibly valuable. I think it's up there as one of my favorite box sets. I think Doctor Strange is an iconic character in his own right. So I think he's got a lot of appeal just in general. But regardless of that, he is a very unique, very impactful character that, because of those two things, I think you could make a plan to fit him in pretty much any affiliation just to try him out. They all do something interesting for him, or he does something interesting for them. And Wong is similar, because Wong is such a specialized support piece. We mentioned before that you'd only want to include him if you've got a plan, but he is the only piece in the game that does what he does. So if you want to craft that plan around him, then do it, right? And both of these unique, powerful support models are in the same box. I think any player, in my opinion, is going to be tempted by it. When you add the cards on top of that, the tactics cards are nice to have, but they really only function with these characters. So I'm always happy to see that you don't need to chase after tactics cards from different box sets, but you're going to be glad you've got these cards when you purchase the characters, but you're not purchasing the box for the cards, I don't think. On the other hand, the Crisis is really, really cool. I think it's going to be really fun, and I think a lot of people are going to enjoy playing it.
Yeah, and just to pair it with Pat said, I think this is a fantastic value. I think if you listen to what we talked about with Strange, how he's this defensive support piece, and if that's a way that you want to approach the game, I think this definitely might be one worth picking up. And if you're a patron, you can stay tuned for our kind of hot takes almost on the Defenders affiliation, which is a really cool, really interesting affiliation. They have a really interesting lineup so far of characters that they can take. And with that in mind, yeah, patrons, thank you so much. You can listen to the After the Credits scene right after that. Everyone else, thank you all for your listening. Be sure to give us any reviews on iTunes or Spotify. We really appreciate it. Until next time, everyone, cheers and happy gaming.
Somewhere across the bifrost, way up high, there's a pod that I've heard of once in a lullaby. Skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come.